This is the podcast from Clinical Chemistry. I'm Bob Barrett. Evaluation of RNA in oral fluid is an emerging diagnostic technology with great potential for disease detection. In the September 2012 issue of Clinical Chemistry, Dr. David Wong and his colleagues at UCLA explored massively parallel sequencing for providing nucleotide-level sequence information for RNA in saliva. Dr. Wong is the Felix and Mildred Yip Professor and Associate Dean of Research at the UCLA School of Dentistry, and he's our guest today in this podcast. Dr. Wong, you and your team have published many studies that investigated different aspects of saliva. What are the key findings of this present study?
This paper represents a significant milestone in the advancement of the science and the capability of utilizing the transcriptomic constituents in saliva for clinical as well as for fundamental science understanding. From the clinical perspective, it really represents a new frontier in towards the harnessing and development of biomarkers in saliva. The concept of extracellular RNA in cellular communication and biomarker development now is an accepted concept, and in saliva is no different than that of other bodily fluid. So that really represents an advancement in terms of its resolution, of its boundary, and the level of we can harness all in one run, so to speak, both the mammalian content in the RNA, microRNA, non-coding RNA, as well as the microbiome content of it. And from the fundamental science perspective, it represents, you know, a credentialing, if that's a good word for it, of the credibility of the existence of a salivary transcriptome from a scientific perspective, and how we can sort of begin to project the biological functionality of how these constituents may serve in a biological and physiological perspective. So it really opens up a new frontier whereby the clinical utilities as well as the fundamental science of how these extracellular RNA in saliva could work in a cellular communicative venue.
Where exactly does the RNA come from in saliva, and what's its function in the oral cavity?
These are two very, very, you know, important questions where currently there may not be any obvious answers, but the landscape is changing very rapidly from a number of perspectives. This paper, what it sort of allow us to conclude is it's a credentialing. The salivary transcriptome is now a credible entity within saliva. The sources of it is very interesting, and we have approached this and others as well, that basically, you know, every fluid that comes into the oral cavity, either from the gingival auricular fluid, that little gap between the tooth and the gum, or from the salivary gland, which on a daily basis, the three major pairs of salivary gland that surrounds the oral cavity produce collectively a liter to a liter and a half of whole saliva. That's equivalent to 2 to 3 bottled water that we consume on a daily basis. Imagine that 2 to 3 volumes of that constantly real time, come into our oral cavity non-painfully and non-invasively, and carries with it these sort of informative biological omics information that we can harness. So these are the sources, but perhaps what is really more telling is a recent discovery that in a bodily function are these vesicular entities where organs and cell sources shed these vesicular entities that is generally under the term exosomes that harbors, you know, cell cellular constituents, including RNA, microRNA, and they were disseminated through the vasculature to different parts of the body, including the salivary gland, and we have shown that, and they come into the salivary gland and then present themselves in saliva. Thereby, it really represents a novel signaling mechanism, if you will, how information and constituents from a part of the body could be disseminated through the vasculature to different parts of the body, including salivary gland. The interesting thing about salivary gland is where does it go and where does it exert its biological effect, which is not systemic or circulatory, but it goes down the oral mucosal tract, the GI system. So the source is multiple. It is from the salivary gland itself, and a defined mechanism is now in place, which are these vesicular entities that serve as signaling, information that shed from different parts of the body, and they come to different parts, including the salivary gland as well.
Doctor, unlike DNA, RNA is very sensitive and easily degraded. So how is it possible to detect intact RNA in saliva?
It's a very, very insightful questions, and we ask that very same question when we approach his work. But what is really perhaps is novel and impactful in this field is that the RNA in saliva, as well as in other body, you know, biofluid in blood, in cerebrospinal fluid, in tears and urine, they are not in free form. So as we learn more about these extracellular RNA, they don't exist in free form, and they're encapsulated within these vesicular entities, which serve as a protective vesicle that shuttles these cellular constituents from a source, for example, a tumor. We recently saw that in a series of paper that shed from melanoma, and the vesicular entity was seated in bone marrow and facilitate, interestingly, a tumor metastatic phenotype. So the body has a mechanistic basis in shedding this information, and there is a protective, you know, moiety that harbors this information, and through this mechanism it confers its stability, and thereby answer a question that at the very beginning we discovered it in 2004, where the Sowry transcriptome was first reported, and its stability has since and continued to be demonstrated, and a mechanistic sort of underpinning to it was unraveled in recent years, which would pinpoint to this vesicular entity, which now constitute the central working mechanism how the extracellular RNA could exert an effect not only in saliva, but in blood, in urine, and other body fluid that shuttles information from a part of the body to another.
In the study published in Clinical Chemistry, you not only describe the transcriptome from the human subjects, but also the microbiome. Is there an interaction between these signatures, and why does it make sense to identify both signatures at once?
It's a very, very exciting question. It also paints a very, very exciting landscape as why these emerging technology carries value from a scientific and clinical perspective. So from a technological scientific point of view, that all these information emerge at the nucleotide level of both the mammalian transcriptome, which includes the RNA, the microRNA, and the non-coding RNA, where that interplay itself is currently emerging. We've seen it in other body organ and in fluid, and that story is unfolding itself, that these constituents are not there by accident. You know, the notion of saliva carries with it, allow me to say, it used to be thought of like a trash can. You know, things just end up there. You know, you drink your Coca-Cola and you drink your coffee, and then you sneeze and you somehow, you know, end up with certain composition. But the more we sort of know about the physiology and biology of the organ is that these are highly regulated, and now we know that these entities are conveyed and then transfer into the salivary gland, into saliva, in a very defined way. So the interplay of the transcriptomic content, as well as, you know, their other constituents as well, proteins and DNA and metabolites, which is not the subject of our topic today, but they are there encapsulated in this same moiety. So the dynamic interplay of the transcriptome, as well as the potential interplay between the microbiome and the host in this milieu of the oral cavity, is very much a landscape that's very fertile for scientific investigation. So a new chapter of cellular communication, a new chapter of signaling and communication that is conveyed perhaps through another body source and biofluid, that is salivary gland and saliva, is this landscape that we're very excited about in terms of how it may convey, you know, both a clinical perspective for biomarker development, which obviously is very fertile ground as well, that a non-invasive fluid that comes in, you know, continuously on a daily basis that we can harness using technology like we report in this paper that can identify discriminatory marker for life-threatening diseases, to a fundamental understanding that we have a segment of our cellular biological communication that is outside of a circulatory system, but is a companion biofluid. And if we remember that where does saliva go, you know, so when you sort of end up in the oral cavity, most people would think that it got spitted out. But biologically and physiologically, it goes down our esophagus into our GI tract, where 60% of our mucosal immune system is there. And where was exosome being discovered in the first place? All within the immune system. So there lies these exciting, you know, testable hypotheses that we're excited about, you know, where this paper and this outcome poise us to begin to explore these scientific and mechanistic interactions.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised to find small nuclear RNAs in saliva? And why do you think they're so highly abundant there?
It's a very insightful question, and we are just as surprised as you were. And again, that sort of points to the uniqueness and perhaps the discovery of the utilization of deep sequencing, RNA-seq in exosomes is really just beginning to happen. I would tend to think that as more and more groups are sort of applying these level of technology, this level of resolution to their exosomal content in blood and urine, perhaps a similar outcome would emerge. But then again, you know, sort of having this level of presence of non-coding RNA in the salivary, you know, exosome is indeed surprising, and perhaps it sort of echoes the thought that these are non-coding, you know, information that are regulatory, you know, in nature, and so there lies the excitement of this new chapter of biological interplay that we would like to sort of unravel in saliva, utilizing the extracellular RNA.
As you've said, the oral cavity is exposed to many influences, such as foods consumed and saliva flow rate, circadian salivary secretion, other factors. How do these aspects come into play?
They all do, and in particular that there is this dynamic, open communication between the exogenous environment and the oral cavity. However, saliva could turn itself into a scientific entity whereby in our clinic here, in our lab here, that we ask patients to come in with 2 hours of fasting. When they come in, they would rinse with distilled water 3 times, and then there is an SOP in place for them to produce saliva. So that exogenous environment is there. It is part of the reality, but we could obtain saliva and obtain its biological constituents in a very scientific manner. And on the topic of diurnal variation, amongst other things, is this is not unique to saliva. This is present in blood, in every other body fluid. This is just part of our body. So what we need to do and what we have done is to define the scientific parameters whereby we can control these confounding factors and minimize it or utilize it to the best possible way for both translational and basics understanding. So while saliva is sort of has historically have this notion and reputation of not a very scientific entity, that landscape has changed. The National Institute of Dental and Craniofacial Research in the past 10 years has invested into this area here to turn saliva into a credible scientific entity where translational and scientific work can be performed. And I think, you know, one of our lessons today is what does this RNA do in saliva? It really synergizes with this recent landscape of the extracellular RNA communication program. So it's a very exciting time where this paper reports a technology where it can really, you know, finally survey the transcriptomic content from both a mammalian and a microbiome origin and begin to look at their interplay and also look at their eventual capability for both translational and for mechanistic understanding as well.
Well, finally, Dr. Wong, why do you believe that saliva is such an important biofluid?
Well, perhaps, you know, it's another way to sort of pose this question is, you know, while my advocacy is looking into saliva, the capability of defining the scientific foundations in saliva and from what we know so far, and I think in part is that the NIH investment is it omics information, the genomic, the proteomic, the transcriptomic are being fostered and developed in a multitude of personalized medicine sort of application. These very constituents are present in saliva, as I call them, as diagnostic alphabets for clinical applications. The point here is that, you know, the awareness of the presence of these omics, you know, information that are clinically, translationally, you know, discriminatory, and yet at the same time could open up these new chapters in cellular communication, presents, you know, a body of information that we otherwise would not have been aware of. Now, with that being said, when the scientific, you know, foundation is credentialed, that's really is the key. You know, is there any value to harnessing the salivary transcriptome for biomarker development, say, for example? I mean, when that is credentialed, then the secondary level, what I call secondary level of advantages, kicks in. is non-invasive, is non-painful, and is non-embarrassing. And, you know, as a consumer, at the end of the day, if I need to do a spinal tap to get a diagnostic result and there's no other choice, sure, that has to be done. But if there's a choice of performing the same procedure non-invasively, non-painfully, non-embarrassingly, the answer is clear. The holy grail of diagnostic is non-invasiveness. Yes, blood is minimally invasive, but if that scientific credential is endowed with insulinum, it's the holy grail.
Dr. David Wong is the Felix and Mildred Yip Professor and Associate Dean of Research at the UCLA School of Dentistry. He's been our guest in this podcast from Clinical Chemistry. I'm Bob Barrett. Thanks for listening.